Welcome to the Fantasy Golf Degenerates Podcast.
Jordan Bell, third. Jordan Bell, third. Yo, yo.
What is going on, DGEN Nation? Kenny Kim here, bringing you another Fantasy Golf Degenerates podcast this week for the Farmers Insurance Open. It's the first really big star-studded field of the year. I am excited. Of course, I am with Tyler Tambolini. Tyler, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing good, Kenny. Another big event, finally. You know, we come back. We've had a couple of these, what everyone wants to call these quote-unquote warm-up events, but now we get a big boy event, and I'm excited about it. Before we get in, guys, just want to remind you this podcast is sponsored and presented to you by rotogrinders.com. Head on over to rotogrinders.com/dgen. Get yourself set up for the first month on the premium service. Go through a lot of that later and what I'm doing over there. But a lot to talk about here, Kenny. It was another nice week on the tour, man. We had Tony Finau, man, the guy. He just can't close it.
Yeah, I mean, I had a little bit of a conversation with Jeff Feinberg over on Twitter about it. And, you know, I said that Tony might have something mentally blocking him. I mean, he's just not as strong mentally as other golfers. And while I think that's true, there were some numbers posted by Data Golf that sort of went the other way. You know, talking about his strokes gain and his like expected win, his win expectancy after, you know, while being in contention. Go check it out over at Data Golf on Twitter. It's nice little feed to go, you know, look at when you're trying to do golf research. So make sure you check that out. But they, you know, and what they were saying is like usually like he plays decent on Sundays, like good, but never great. And so he always gets caught because somebody else plays great behind him. I mean, if you look at the numbers, this is his 35th top 10 since his last victory. I think it's something like it's some astonishing number where he's top 10ing like over 35, like third, like almost, I would say like 33% of all his made cuts, like one in every three made cuts. He finished top 10 since his loss. I think this is the 15th time that he has been within three strokes of the lead going into the final round since his last win, and no win. I mean, yesterday he didn't shoot horribly. What did he shoot? Like, 69, 70, somewhere around there. He started off strong, but too many missed short putts, a couple on the front, water in the back, another missed putt. I think that, you know, until he finally cracks that bubble and gets the win, this is going to be something that's really going to weigh him down, especially because he's going to hear it. He knows about it. He hears it every Sunday when he's in the lead or when he's close. Someone's going to ask him about it. And until he gets that win, it's going to be a tough sledding for him. And I don't know if you could ever really have faith in him going into a Sunday near or top of the leaderboard. Now, I will say that once he does somehow pull off that victory, I think wins will come in bunches. But it's just a matter of if and when he gets it. What's your take on Tony?
Well, it's funny you just said that. I mean, we just had this conversation last week about Kevin Na. Like he was almost in tears talking about it, saying how it took him so long to get there. But then when he did, it was like it took him a little while to get back. But then once he got back, then it was like bang, bang, bang. And now he's winning like at a crazy clip. And it just took some time. I'm not going to compare him to Na. I'm just saying that's one thing that stood out to me. Man, I don't know. Like I said, I saw some of the stats as well. I saw someone say, you know, the strokes gain stats he's got are as good as Rory McIlroy's in these spots. Yet Rory McIlroy has 7 wins and Finau has 0. 35 top tens, no wins. You can't just always chalk it up to it's hard. You know, obviously I was in the mix with you and Feinberg talking. Feinberg's our boy, just, you know, getting into the mix, chiming in. I just think it can't all just be bad luck. Like Rory's not running that hot that he wins seven times that way. And Finau's running that bad that he loses that many times. The missed four footers, the putting it in the water when he goes right. You know, I said it today about, you know, Kyle Porter brought up a good thing, and I want to talk about this piece for a second. I just thought it was interesting. He said, you know, you got to be a little bit more inconsistent. And I, in my head, just immediately, as I do with most things, relate to what I'm trying to craft my game after in DFS. And it's like, if you're always going to play this safety lineup or all this chalk in your lineups in these large field tournaments, you might cash a bunch of lineups, but you're never going to have that outlier that gets to the top. And so you are going to lose a lot more times than not. And what he was kind of saying, everyone took it like, oh, so don't go play good or play your A game or whatever. It's more of, he's always shooting in that same number. Even when people talk about Webb tracking him down at the Waste Management Phoenix Open, yes, that is some bad luck or a little bit of variance that's going to slide in when there's 35 events that, you know, you've come top 10 and you get down to this spot, that one even worse in a playoff, but he shot a 70 on Sunday. Like that's not going to cut it. And it just, that can allow for somebody to sneak in and drop two 20 foot bombs on you to take the thing down. It's bad luck in that instance, but I'm just saying overall, and two more quick things that came to mind, cause we're hot on this topic, is Tiger, JT, Rory, Rahm. These guys are killers, closers, crushers. They go out there. They all talk about the same thing on Sundays. They talk about shooting a number, having a plan. They go after that number. Sometimes they get hot, like Rory at Bay Hill, and blow that number out of the water and win by five. Sometimes they don't hit the number. It all goes downhill, and they don't even come in the top 10. But guess what? The times they go out and hit it, they win. That's where I think Kyle Porter was saying the inconsistency. I teased a little that I said, you know, what else can you do? And Max Homa jumped in and said, what do you want him to do? How can you play more inconsistent? And I just said, like, take more chances, like Siwoo Kim, driver off the deck, going after it. Obviously, Finau didn't need driver off the deck. He was closer as he hit it at. The point wasn't you need driver off the deck. The point was, when you heard Siwoo after, it was kind of funny because he did his interview and he says, I didn't really take too many chances. He says, well, actually, he took huge chances. You looked at that. He looks like he had the big balls out there taking some of these shots. But he mentioned it a couple times that he looked at the leaderboard. And I know that's not for everybody, but I'm just saying, think about that. He was looking at the leaderboard. He knows this is a course where you can get hot, go low, and someone can take this thing from you. And he kept his foot on the pedal regardless what happened. What was it, 16? We ran that ridge real close, but landed it up on the green. You know, the driver off the deck thing earlier, these are just little examples of, like I said, just go for it. Don't play to not lose, or don't just worry about, if I play my A game, good things can happen. You need to shoot 8 under. Figure that out. He's a crusher. I love Tony Finau. I just wonder, and I root for him all the time. I just wonder if he even cares enough. Like, he wants to win, of course, but is he just content getting that? It is what it is. Not everybody is a Rory, JT, Rahm closer type guy, Tiger, like he was back in the day. It's just the way it is. Not everybody can do that. Winning is hard.
I'm sure he wants to win. Everybody does say that. I'm sure. I don't think he has less motivation to win. I just think that the issue with Tony is, you know, he's good, but not great on Sundays. He'll shoot 70, 69, you know, 71 on a par 72 on Sunday when he's in contention. But he won't shoot a 65. He won't shoot a 64 unless he's like 8 strokes back. You know, that's the issue with them.
But so that's what I'm saying. And that's what he was saying today, like, take more chances is that. It's like, you know, you're in the lead. So you want to just play your A game.
So you're basically saying he's playing not to lose. I feel like maybe it's not true.
I'm not in his mind. I'm only watching what you guys are. I'm saying, but 35 times is enough sample size to talk about. Winning is hard. There's lots of guys. You got to remember, yes, the guys behind you go for broke because they got nothing to lose, man. They made the cut. They made their paycheck. They're hunting you down to hope that you make mistakes and they can pull one out. But why do you have to be down five like Ricky did it in the past two at the Players? These guys we always see them as you have to come from behind to win. And it's whatever. It's just, my point is, I think that it's, you know, don't spend too much more time. I just think that he hasn't done. I want to see him come out and shoot for like 10 under. And if it works, he blasts the field. And if it doesn't, finish 20th. You don't need all these top fives. Go after the W full on and see what happens.
Yeah, I think when he does win, it's going to be when he's chasing. But that's enough Finau talk. We're not even talking about the winner. Siwoo, what a great final round for him. I mean, the last few holes, birdie what, two out of the last three. I mean, the stones on him. He did come close on 16. You know, that ball bounced right. If it bounced left, it's going down that 30-foot trench into that bunker. We saw Phil do that a few years ago and take himself right out of the tournament with a couple of holes left. That could easily happen with Cantlay chasing him down, shooting a 61 on Sunday, which was incredible. 20 under, 18 under on the weekends with 18 birdies, and he doesn't even win. And that's the most important thing about making a cut as well, because Cantlay made the cut on the number and finished second. He was incredible. And the story about Cantley is, I mean, I read some stuff about him. You know, he has to wake up like 4 hours before his tee time. All the injury history he had, if you're not familiar, of the car accident he was in, it really messed up his back. And I've said this before, he was Jordan Spieth before Spieth. He was supposed to be that guy, but that injury really derailed his career early on in his career. He's had to come back. He measures his season. He doesn't play that much because that injury is still there. It's still nagging. He has to wake up 4 hours before each tee time to stretch his body to get ready to actually be able to play the game without pain. To do that, that takes a lot of devotion to the game and love to the game. And I mean, the guy was freaking amazing yesterday. Siwoo just pounding it down his throat with incredible drives on 18 in the lead after his birdie on 17, making that great putt, even though Homa didn't help him out with that read. That really, really helped. One thing I do like about Siwoo, the way he putts, you never saw a ball left short, maybe like one putt the whole round yesterday. A very aggressive, sort of like an old school Ricky type of putting where, you know, if he misses, he's always going to be, Ricky now is like 3 to 5 feet past the hole. I'd say, Siwoo's maybe a couple of feet past the hole. But that aggressive nature in putting is nice because you're not going to make it if you leave it short. And that's the way Siwoo does it. It's been 4 years since his last win, but this is his third win. He's still not even 25. It was a big three wins on a 25. It's like him and Morikawa. That's it. You know, on tour, that's it. I expect more big things to see when you can see that his game, one thing about his game, it's been getting a lot more consistent. I feel like, you know, like the thing about old school Siwoo is, you know, he'd have a high finish and then he missed two cuts and high finish and missed three cuts. Now he's making the majority of his cuts, top 25, top 25, top 25. Working with Claude Harmon, his swing looks really nice. It looks like the future's bright for him. And hopefully the Olympics come out this year and him and Sungjae have a chance to get a medal. So they don't have to go to military service because, I mean, it'd be a shame that these two are going to miss a couple of years of their prime because these are two of the top golfers in the world and to miss them out for a couple of years, that would really suck. So hopefully Olympics still goes through and they'll be able to have a chance this year in Tokyo. And then, of course, Cantley, now personally for me, go ahead, you talk and we'll talk about how everything went this week.
Yeah, I think you just said a Korean week for a little while there, and it ended that way as well, Kenny. So you must be pumped, right? Yeah, Siwoo, Benny An, Sungjae, all these guys were doing their thing this week. So love to see that. Siwoo Kim, I said it today, the SWK. I like you put Stones in there. I had it differently. Savage, winner, killer. This guy went out, finished strong, like you said, did his thing down the stretch. Funny you mentioned the Harmon stuff with Brooks News today, saying that he dropped him right after DJ won the Masters, said I'm out. And then, you know, you've got Ricky used to be with him and went away. And you mentioned Ricky with the putting. This is a swing coach. But yeah, Siwoo's been doing his thing, man. The consistency's there. Just like I said, you said the Stones. I said just a Savage, just played so strong throughout the day on Sunday to get the job done, holding things off. You know, he knows Cantlay's out there warming up. He sees the leaderboard. He said multiple times he was watching Cantlay up there like, man, when is this guy going to stop? And Cantlay right down to the wire, man. Love that guy's game too. We've seen him close out tournaments like that. I think back to the Memorial a couple of wins ago for him where he just closed out on that Sunday and everyone said, you know, Adam Scott just shook his head like, how do I compete with this guy? That's the Sunday rounds we're talking about, man. And yesterday was one for the ages. Didn't quite get it done there. But like you said, it made the cut barely. And that's all you need to do sometimes and you can get yourself a second place finish. So good for him. Cam Davis, answer. Gim bounce back. You know, there was a lot of good guys up there. The Molinari resurgence. You know, Casey, these guys, Ricky Fowler, 21st. These guys all came into the woodworks. Woodland, by the way, speaking of woodworks, and back into the mix. So I thought it was a good tournament, man. A lot to take away and bring into this week for what we're going to talk about here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing about Cantley is if you look at his three wins, Shriners Memorial were his first two wins. He was four strokes back going into the final round. He came back and won those. His win in Zozo a few months ago, he was three strokes back going into the final round, won those. He's one of those chasers that can really get hot on Sunday and you can find a good number because I went 27-1 on him on Saturday night, which I thought was excellent for a guy who just hit like 10 birdies or 9 birdies in a single round and moved up, I don't know, like 45 spots on the leaderboard. I thought that was a great number. That would have saved my week. So I actually didn't bet Siwoo. I had a bunch of them in DFS, but it didn't matter because like I didn't bet Siwoo and I had my issue was I had a whole bunch of them in DFS, but I just couldn't get anybody else to make the cut. Like, my Cascade Cornerstones are garbage. They're over four. It's like, you know, one of the few times that ever happens. And then, you know, I had him, I had Answer, I had all these guys that have finished. I had Davis, you know, I had all these guys that finished well. You know, I had him in my write-up as well, but I couldn't get a lineup to get more than like 5 out of 6 or 4 out of 6. So that was really, really frustrating. So it was a horrible week for me. The only things that made it better, Virginia just legalized sports gambling. So all the mobile books are available now. I mean, the two most prevalent, I guess, out there are out. So, you know, live betting top 20s was one thing that I really think is a good way to go about on a Saturday night. You look at those top 20s. I bet I'll put a big chunk on Bo Hoke, top 20 on Saturday night. You know, he shot 6 under on Saturday. I think he was in 28th place. He was 2 strokes out of the lead, 2 strokes out of the top 20. And the book I was at had him at plus 600 to finish top 20. I mean, that's pretty large fucking number for a top 20 finish. You know what I'm saying? So I pounded that. I hit that. I hit like a three person parlay, matchup parlay. I hit that. So, I mean, I ended up doing well on the gambling side, even without having the winner. So that, you know, partially saved my week. Still losing week overall because DFS just sucked. And then I had like a top 13 lineup in Showdown as well, because I had Michael Thompson, I had Woodland, I had Siwoo, and I had Cantlay in a single lineup. And, you know, it would have won basically all the large money contests, but I can't afford to play those, which sucks. My man Gup took one of those down, so shout out to him. Won 10K on the final round Showdown. But it wasn't the best week, but, you know, I'm going to move past it. I'm going to just forget what happened. But yeah, the gambling aspect now, the live betting, and there is some issues this week with live betting, which you should definitely go about. And I'll talk about that a little bit when we get to the course. How'd you do, Tambo?
I'll tell you in a second, but it's so funny you're talking about this mobile stuff and this ability, Kenny. I'm worried about you, man, because now that you're thinking it's a great thing, but it's not always a great thing to have that many options and access during the middle of the tournament. You're going to love putting some bets in every night.
And I didn't go crazy. My man gets on the
Crown Royal. Okay.
I didn't go crazy. I went crazy on Saturday night. You know, I had it the whole week, you know, but I had my bets, but looking at the numbers, especially top 20s, I mean, there's some value there. And I think that's a great way to go about it. You know, you're not going to
bring
get,
it back,
know,
man. Bring back Kenny After Dark. 20. But Kenny After Dark's coming back.
Yeah. But I mean, like,
these live lines.
Yeah. The live, they just worked out. I had a Michael Thompson at 80-1, you know, something like that going into the final round. I thought he had a chance and he didn't, until he had a triple bogey. So, I mean, I like that aspect of it. So I think I'm going to start saving a lot of my weekly bankroll in golf betting for live.
We'll talk more about that
for this week, because
all I was going to say is that, yeah, the Chasers can win here. We'll talk about it when we get there with the betting. As far as my week went, it was great. I hopped on. I talked about it on the Wednesday shows. I bet Siwoo outright. Shout out to Gup. He had him, and I know he hit that, plus the 10K in Showdown. My man Notorious over at RG was on Siwoo as well. He had him at 70-1, I believe, even a better number. So that was awesome. I wrote him up on Roto Grinders. I used a ton of Siwoo over Burns. That was sort of my pivot over there that I talked about. So, yeah, I did like that.
Yeah, I faded Burns too.
Scheffler was too good to be true, and that was just a fool's gold. So not the best DFS week overall, but the betting saved me, and so I'll take that. Nice winner. It's been a couple, 2 out of 3 out of each way, nothing last week, and then a winner this week, so I'm happy about that. Full card for this week, though, and then, like I said, still going to save some behind when we get to bets there. We'll talk about it, but everything else was solid, man. Like I said, I like this week, and then we get to move it on to a bigger tournament this week, and there's some great DraftKings tournaments, at least, that I can say that I didn't really check out everything else yet, but I know they've got a $20 this week with 250K up top. They've got some big tournaments over there this week, so I'm excited to get into this one.
All right, so let's get to our listener league. The winner was Comedy Mogul. I think this is his second win of this season. So really nice for Comedy Mogul out there. He started off with Tony Finau, finished fourth, of course, 126 points, 14.11% owned. Sungjae, who just fell apart on the weekend a little bit. He would look really good Thursday and Friday, 22% owned, 94.5 points, finished in 12th. He had the winner, Siwoo, 143 points, 25.27% owned. So nice on the FGD listener leagues. All you listeners, is pretty sharp, him being about 26%. Cam Davis, another guy we both like, 22% solid number out there, guys. 127 points, finished in third. John Ho, 9%, 78 points, finished in 21st. And Ben Martin, that was the one that was the outlier. He barely made the cut, finished in 56, but he made the cut, got 6-6 in a week where like 2 or 3% got 6-6. So good on Comedy Mogul. What'd you think of the lineup?
I really like that move. That was pretty sharp. You just drop right down to the very bottom. And if you get it, you get it. You don't. But everything else, he got to fit in because of it. Finau, Im, Kim, Davis, all these guys. And then Johnny Ho was a little sneaky. We didn't talk about him last week that I recall. But I know he got brought up a little bit throughout the week and stuff. And just if you looked at what he'd been doing, it was just whether or not he was going to stay with it. But he'd had a lot of top 20s coming in, you know, that sort of thing. So almost 10%. People caught on to it, it looks like. But overall, solid build. Avoided the landmines, right? The Burns, the Schefflers, the Reeds, all those plays that were, you know, guys I liked mostly, you know, Reed and Scheffler, I certainly liked, and that hurt me quite a bit. So good to see that there. And then, yeah, all the scoring. Cam Davis is just a beast at 7,700. That's, like I said, when he makes a cut for you in a scoring environment, it's just lights out. So I built a rule in for him this week. We'll talk about it when we get down the board. But great job to Comedy Mogul. I look to go and add him to the final year Tournament of Champions type event that we run. And, yeah, he was already in there. So shout out to Comedy Mogul, and we'll see him in the three-man this week.
All right, so let's finally get to this week. It's a big tournament. So the PGA Tour is in La Jolla, California. Sorry, this week for the Farmers Insurance Open. The Farmers will be played on the North and South courses of Torrey Pines. Golfers need to play both courses on Thursday and Friday, and if they make the cut, they're going to play the South course two times on the weekend. The North course went through some major renovations a few years ago, but it's still by far the easiest course of the two. No golfer has shot over par on the North course and won here since 1983, so you got to get that action in on the North course. Golfers need to take advantage of their one round here because the South course is a monster. One of the longest courses on tour, very difficult. The course has definitely gone through renovations last year and this year because it is hosting the U.S. Open, so I expect it to play a little bit more difficult than it even has the past few years. You know, one interesting tidbit from Twitter, this comes from @Adon7X, another great follower, really sharp, really good at golf betting. Here's his angle on Twitter. He says, don't bet anything until tee times are out, then only bet the North course starters pre-tourney. Wait to bet the South course starters after round one. Now, this makes sense because, you know, the South is definitely a more difficult course. The bookmakers may not take that into account when they post their live bets after round one. You know, we may be able to take advantage of some larger odds for golfers that play the South course first. You know, if someone shoots like 8 under on the North course on Thursday and another golfer shoots 1 or 2 under on the South course, but you know, that's a pretty good score for the South course. You know, you might be able to get an upper tier golfer at like 30, 40, 50 to one, or even like maybe not a middle tier golfer close to 100 to one, 80 to one after that, if they play the South course first and are a few strokes back. So make sure you keep that. I like that angle. I think it's something that I'm going to use this week. And that's why I only have a couple of bets on the pod right now, because I'll add more on Wednesday and I'll add even more on Thursday. Now, weather can play a huge factor, as both courses are situated near the ocean and are susceptible to trade winds. 4 years ago, you know, we saw a whole bunch of wind whip hard, you know, inflated the final round to stroke, the final round score of 5 strokes over par. So, you know, make sure you check the weather. Now, there's some definitely been some trends here at this tournament. First off, 10 of the last 12 winners had a top 10 previously at this tournament before their win. Nearly 40% of all winners here have some type of California connection, either growing up or living in California, or going to school here. That sort of makes sense because, you know, California is basically majority of the golf courses use POA. You know, not many other states around the United States have a lot of POA type greens. So, you know, these guys are playing these greens the whole time. They can read them. They know the bumps. They know how it plays. From at the Fantasy Grind on Twitter, six of the past seven winners made at least one start in the calendar year prior to their win. That most likely has to do with the fact that, you know, top-notch golfers win here, and most of them play a tournament of champions. So we'll see how much that plays out. Now let's get to the courses. North Course, 7,258 yards, around 7,300 yard, par 72, four par threes, four par fives. Par five is all reachable by most golfers, and is also drivable par four. Scoring well on these five holes will go a long way to make the cut. If they struggle on the par fives here, you know, it's going to be tough for golfers to make the cut. Tom Weisskopf redesigned the course in 2016, added a bunch of length, widened the fairways, removed bunkers, enlarged the greens. Off the tee, golfers see, you know, average to large, average size fairways with thickest rough. There are a few trees and fairway bunkers to worry about, but much less so than the South Course. On approach shots, they'll see, you know, average to large size greens with bunkers guarding most putting surfaces. The greens are bent grass on this course, stimp meter rating of around 12. The South Course at Torrey is, you know, 7,700 yards plus. Four par threes, four par fives. Par fives are really long, averaging around 590 yards. So only really the longest of hitters have a chance of reaching all four of these holes in two. Of course, that's also wind dependent. This course is one of the hardest on tour and plays between three and four strokes more difficult on average than the North Course. Again, that's going back to that betting thing that I talked about. So, you know, a guy shoots average on the South Course, he's going to be four strokes behind the average golfer on the North Course. So, you know, the lines can definitely be weird when it comes to that. We'll see what the bookmakers do. Now, off the tee, golfers see narrow tree-line fairways with plenty of bunkers to dodge. Only around 50% of fairways are hit on this course year in and year out. The rough around the fairway is pretty brutal. It's kikuyu. You know, you see that in, like, South Korea. You see that in, like, New Zealand. You see that in Australia. That type of grass in the rough. You know, it's about 2.5 inches tall. It's going to be pretty gnarly. It could even be more, just depending on how much they've grown it out. A lot of the holes here at the South Course have a slight dogleg right. Right-handed golfers that play cut off the tee, they've been known to thrive here. Now, fairways don't necessarily have to be hit to succeed. Leishman won last year, was almost dead fucking last in driving accuracy. Like, over the last, you know, over the years, accurate golfers finished top 10, bombers have finished top 10. I mean, just going, looking back in the last 2 years, three golfers in the top 20 driving accuracy last year at Torrey finished top 10. Three golfers in the top 20 in driving distance at Torrey finished top 10. Year before, five golfers that finished top 20 in driving accuracy finished top 10. Six golfers that finished top 20 in driving distance finished top 10. I mean, this tournament's going to be one, not going to be one off the tee. It's going to be one on approach shots, true second shot course. Now, on approach shots, golfers, they're going to see average to small size greens, usually narrow in width and lengthy from front to back. High green and regulation numbers usually leads to success here. The putting surface is multi-tiered, good amount of undulation. These greens are protected very well with large bunkers and thick rough. Most of the bunkers guard the front of the greens, which makes approach shots tough, especially since most greens slope from back to front. Now, even though there are a lot of bunkers in the front, most of the greens have, like, little holes or gaps to leave an opening in front of the green. So golfers will have a chance to run up their approaches if they hit it in the rough off the tee. Now, when the pin location is near the front of the green, expect a lot of long approaches with, you know, really fast putts coming down the slope for birdie and par. And like I said earlier, the greens are POA and they're around 13 on the stimp meter. Tambo, what are you looking for this week?
You talked about it a little. We don't need to hit fairways, right? If we look at Leishman last year, let's just play your game, and as long as you got a good second shot in. But I think the two-course rotation, all seriousness, to me, is a little bit more important. Just a couple different reasons. I like your betting angle. You know, Adon, 7X, this guy is awesome. You know, he knows his stuff. So, you know, love all that he does, and he makes a great point there from the betting aspect of it. I just think just in general, too, even for DFS, there is a lot of mental game to it, and you can see it in some of the quotes leading in. So, you know, some like to play the North Course first, get themselves a good little score under their belt, and then know that as long as they play good on day two, they're going to run it out at the South Course three times straight. Bang, 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 right? If they can do that. Other guys have said, nah, actually, I like playing the South Course first, play well enough, grind it out, get through the hard part, and then know that even if I'm even par, I'm not up there on the leaderboard. I get the easy course on the day to make the cut and then slide into the weekend and go back into the grind of taking down a tournament. So I think that's interesting, you know, to look at that. Obviously, if you're playing something like Showdown or from that betting angle that you already brought up, I think targeting the North course, to think of it from that perspective for Showdown and then for the betting, everything you already mentioned, I don't mind that. So that's great. But like you said, faster greens, longer course. To me, one thing is it stands out, like you said, is it doesn't always just mean bombers. Lots of other guys have been in the mix and got up there. Typically, the cream does rise to the top. So if you look at like last year, it was Leishman, but then Rahm and Rory hot on his tails. So I think there's lots of opportunity for some of these big names to pop off. And then we've got a little bit of a unique situation where some of these guys just came back last week or the first time. But in looking at all the winning lineups last week and some of the, you know, better players in their player pools, it was a lot of the guys that took risks with Woodland, Fowler, Molinari, like these types of guys, Casey, they all had themselves pretty good weeks just warming up. So I think this is going to be a fun event, man. And it's definitely going to be a good Sunday. Know that.
Sounds good. Let's get to these tiers, you know, in the 10K range, you got Reed all the way to Rahm. How are you going about it this week?
Yeah, the Rahm thing's interesting. I definitely like Rahm and Rory. I mean, that's the obvious two at the top, but I wonder that, you know, I haven't heard many mention this yet, but the Rahm withdraw last week, right? You know, is he just preparing for this, or, you know, does that make his ownership a little lower because people don't want to risk because of that? So maybe in tournaments and whatnot, he's a better play. But, you know, Rory, top five, top three last 2 years, always like him in these sort of 15 and under or worse type of scoring events. Not much really else needs to be said for those two. I think Rahm and Rory are the clear favorites. I do wonder about Tony. We just talked about him completely there, but he's always good for a top five, right? We definitely mentioned that as well. So, you know, if the first instinct for most would be to fade him because he can't close everything we already mentioned at the top of the show, then I don't know if that would be a good pivot from, you know, someone like X or something, if people are going to go back there. But, you know, I don't know if people are going to like X because he hasn't typically played well here in the past. Mind you, he has said that it's because of friends and family in the area and all that stuff, but should have less of that to distract him this year. So, you know, and Reed didn't really show me much last week. He was all putter on day one. I hate to not go back to a guy like that, but typically I like to go back when they get a little bit cheaper. He still stayed up there in price. I really do like Rahm and Rory so much more. And if no one's going to play Finau, I think, like I said, he's definitely still suits the course. It's not like he's playing bad golf. We're just talking about him not closing. A top five could be, you know, pretty good in your lineups going into next week. So I think it's just the three at the top for me as of right now. What about you?
Well, I'm going to actually start off with Rory as my cash game, my first cash game cornerstone. I don't normally go up. I never go up to 11,000 or above in cash, but there's so many. I think the 7K is loaded. There's a lot of good golfers in that range. And the thing is, I think Rory and Rahm are just such a little bit more. I think there's a big gap between them and Finau, Xander and Reed and English and M. So I want one of those two guys in my cash lineup this week. I'm going to go with Rory. Good showing last week. Just didn't come through on Sunday, which has sort of been something that he's had an issue with also. But the thing is, he's had the wins to do it. So we're not really talking too much about that. The one thing I will say is, you know, Tyrrell Hatton has four wins since Rory's last win. Hatton just bumped above Rory in the world golf rankings. So we'll see. Yeah, so we'll see if that's some type of motivation he plays. But, I mean, Rory's history here is great. You can't really deny it. But the one thing I do like about Rory is even though he's long off the tee, he's top five in bogey avoidance in this course or in this field in the last 100 rounds. It's going to be important. You got to avoid bogeys, in large numbers at this course. So I like Rory. I like Rahm. I'm going to be playing Rahm a lot in GBPs. I'm really interested in these bottom three, though, because I'm not sure how the ownership is going to go about. Since I will be light on Rory in tournaments because I am going to use him in cash, I could play another guy in this 10K range. And I think Xander, you know, his course history is so bad, but I like your take that he's not going to be having to deal with family and friends too much because of the virus. He's got to stay in a bubble. There are rules and regulations of what he can and cannot do. So that might make it a little bit easier for him. And, hoping his ownership is, you know, dropped a little bit just because he's missed what, four or five cuts here. So I'm leaning Xander as the other guy I'm going to play in the tournaments this week. Let's go to this 9K range. How are you going about it?
Yeah, I think we're going to jump right back on this English train, right? This guy's just playing some incredible golf, eighth and second here, you know, since 2015, the stats line up. We talked about him playing in this sort of upper echelon group and how good he's been. And it's just hard to get off him at 9,800. I guess Sungjae is right there and has been doing well, but this is where I'm going to pick some names out, man, and just take some shots because, you know, Brooks, if I'll hop on now, if everyone else won't. I know he wasn't very popular last week, didn't come out and have the greatest week, but said he wanted to have a week to warm up. They're talking about him in the news right now with the Harmon news, and it's already being framed up as, well, it's because DJ won that he kind of just flipped off and said, I'm done with it, you know. But I don't know. I think I like him. The course definitely suits him here quite well, I think. And obviously, you know, like I said, another guy like a Rory up top or Hideki, I'll get to in a second, where if it's going to be like minus 13 takes this thing down, that's where I like Brooks. So definitely don't mind him. I think I'll go back to him and talk more about him later on. Hideki, this guy's always sucking me back in, man. I don't know what it is. 9,200 though. But I definitely do like Decky more at spots like this. Like you talked about earlier with Rory, the bogey avoidance. I think, you know, that's somewhere where he shines, these, you know, cream of the crop, rise to the top type fields, has the full all around game. It's just, you know, how bad he's been lately. He just always has ownership. And I was going to say that about X. These are like darlings, man. They just always get it no matter what they're at. So that's one thing. Now, mind you, a lot of people are talking about Wolf this week, and I've got some thoughts on him. But man, the Ho train. So Victor Hovland, I don't know if you saw this, Kenny, but last year, Homa, Hostler, Hoagie, and Hoffman, all top 10. So you got to jump on the Ho train.
The Ho narrative, the Ho train narrative. I like that.
The Victor Hovland, man, you got to jump back on that. So, but anyway, my point is just, you know, Hovland obviously has himself a pretty damn good game. Can hit a lot of greens. The tee to green has been on. Like, he's still been fine. So, you know, the difference is, it's like such a trap in this area. It's him, it's Matsuyama, it's Wolf, it's, you know, Scheffler just crushed everyone's dreams. Of course he's going to come back out here and just smash this week, right? Even though his approach game was way off. I know he only missed the cut on the number, but he's a prime flop leg candidate for these guys that just sucked the week before and then come back out and dominate the next week. So I'm having a tough time in this range, man, but for certain I like Koepka, Hovland, and Matsuyama. I can get behind Wolf. I got a little bit of a FOMO bet on him that I'll bring up now because it's going to come up later anyway. But man, I don't know. He did have one of those good Sunday rounds. It wasn't quite everything, but his off the tee and his approach were on, and obviously connection to the area, done well on Bent Poa. I don't know. It just feels like he's going to get really popular here. And with Decky, Hovland, and Koepka right there, I feel like those are the names that I'd like to be on. Where are you at in this range?
Yeah, I'm going to go Wolf as my second cast game cornerstone. If you look at it in the last 50 rounds, he's first in this field in strokes gained approach. In the last 50. And the funny thing is, if you look in the last 100, you know, rounds, he's 28th. So, you know, his iron game has improved tremendously in the last few months. And you've seen it with his results. I think he got his warm up out of the way last week. Like you said, he had a decent Sunday. I like the way he plays. I like, he's, you know, always been fairly good. He's been really good with his longer irons. You know, I think he's like top 12 in, you know, 200 plus proximity in this field in the last 50 rounds. So I do like him as my second cash game cornerstone. I do like Hovland as well. You know, another guy who is really, you know, over time has been really, really sharp with his longer irons. The majority of approach shots at this course are going to come from 175 yards and up. He's always good at that. And I think I'm going to give Koepka another try as well. You know, I think warming up, you know, just overall, if you look over his, as long as his injuries are good and he's feeling better, you know, that's one thing you're going to have to keep an eye on with him basically for the whole year. But I, you know, I think the ownership will be down. So I like him in tournaments as well. Let's move to this 8K range. I like two guys up top. I like Bubba and Leishman. You know, this is sort of a Bubba track. You play Bubba at Bubba tracks. He hasn't played yet this year, but I think he finished sixth last year, and this was his first event. The time before, I think he finished 23rd, you know, like, I don't know, 6-8 years ago. This was his first event since, like, the Hero. He has a couple of top tens in the Tournament of Champions after a long break, so I'm not real worried about it. So I think he makes a good tournament play. He plays his course well over throughout his career. Leishman is a winner from last year. It looks like his game is back. I actually put some futures on Mark for the Masters and I think the US Open. I think I got him at like 100-1 for those. So I went ahead and jumped on that. You know, for some major futures, it seems like his game is coming back a little bit. Ryan Palmer sticks out to me a little bit as well. He's played this course well. Of course, his game has been strong, really good on par five, really good with long irons. Iron game has been very, very good. Who do you like in this range?
I said at the top, I like Bubba and Leishman, but the guy that stands out the most to me is actually Jason Day, and just seems way too cheap. I talked about it a little bit earlier with the Casey Fowler, Woodland, Molinari type plays. just came through sort of in their own ways at their price tags or for, you know, less than what you expected. This could be one, you know, if ownership probably still does come with it a little bit. He's 8-for-11 made cuts with two wins here. So I suspect that will bring some people around, but he's been good on POA in the past. He's got the numbers here. So, you know, and the wins here. So I think that's going to be good. And a lot of guys talked about it in their quotes as well, is just how much patience you need here. Jay Day is a guy that can have the patience out on the course that's required, much, you know, Leishman did it last year. You talked about Bubba, you know, T6 here last year, just recently. So all these guys seem good. Ryan Palmer, I mean, anywhere we like Rom, right? We've talked about this plenty of times, half joking, but it has been true. And they both have some low rounds at this course over the last couple of years. Palmer has been good. And if you look here too, what was the other thing I had on Palmer? 21st, 13th, and 2nd the last 3 years here. So he's already been showing up. I'm sure, again, that'll bring some ownership. Another guy, Adam Scott, another one of these class golfers at a low price to me, 8,300. It's like Casey at 8,700 last week. He got second here in 2019. He has had a couple of warmups. They haven't been the best showings to kick off this season, but they've been all right. And then at the 8K range, at 8K straight, I should say, we're in the 8K range, but Fowler and Louis at the bottom. Tough to go to Fowler. The price did drop. I still have a hard time with it. I really like Louis quite a bit just because Louis is sort of boom bust, but he does typically do well at sort of these patience courses, hit greens, just make some putts, sort of, you know, grind it out and get your way through there and take this thing down at 12 under or 13 under, but he can definitely top 20 or top 10 at $8,000. The Ricky Fowler thing is just, you know, 21st last week wasn't bad. Another guy who had a decent Sunday round overall with his stats on point for round 4. And then he's a great putter. So if that comes into play, these are those faster greens. We talked about that, knowing where to set up, having some experience, all of those things. It could be interesting. I do lean Louis, and Louis always tends to have lower ownership, but we'll see how that shakes out here. If nobody's going to be on Ricky, though, what was your thoughts? Did you have any on Billy Ho? Because he fits the Ho narrative. And then yeah. Willie Zalatoris, I guess, is getting talked up as well, too. I just noticed the Horschel thing, though, that stood out, the fake narrative that I made up, that is.
Yeah. Oh, Horschel's been playing pretty good golf. I'm probably going to use him in tournaments. I think he's had decent success here. It hasn't been great, but it's been decent. But, yeah, I'll be using a little bit of Horschel. I think, you know, recently, if you look at his recent form, give me 1 second. You know, one thing I do like about him is that, you know, he doesn't really have that large number. He doesn't do too much of the big number out there. You know, if you go about the South course, you know, parring the whole time and a couple birdies here and there, you're going to be in contention.
Yeah, he has. I looked, he's made the last 5 cuts here with 2 top 8s and then 7th 2 weeks ago. It just, you know, depends what you think. The only thing I said with caution would be that, you know, a couple of weeks ago at the Sony, when he got 7th, he actually lost strokes on approach and was basically all putter. And he's typically not, you know, I don't remember or recall from my stuff, that, you know, how good he is on POA and whatnot. It's normally Bermuda, hot weather, things like that, where I think of him. But I mean, anything could happen here. And like I said, he's definitely a class golfer at this price tag. So I don't mind him, I guess. And then did you have any thoughts on Willie Z? I know he's been talked up a little bit, but I don't know about that at 8,100.
Yeah, I don't know about him at that price. You know, I mean, like, you know, if he was like 6,900, yeah. But I mean, I don't really see him. I don't understand why he's that high price. I'm not going to pay up for him. I know he's going to. He's probably going to be a great golfer, but I just don't see it in this field at this time, this week. I think the way he's going to bump up is maybe like a Puerto Rico or a Corrales or, you know, some tournament like that where the field isn't that strong. That's where I see him breaking through. If he somehow does break through at fucking Torrey with this field, I mean, Jesus, he's going to be talked about every fucking week for the rest of the year because it's going to be a pretty astonishing accomplishment for a guy just fresh off the Korn Ferry Tour. All right, so let's move to the 7K range. My third cash game cornerstone is going to be Mr. Woodland. At $7,800, it seems like his game is back. I think he gained like 7 4 strokes tee to green last week. Iron game looks strong. Off the tee game looks strong. Another coastal type course. Before last year, he made the cut here in like 10 straight events. So I do like Gary. Again, another guy really good with his longer irons. He's top 20 in 175 to 200, top 10 in 200 plus here recently. So I do like Mr. Woodland at 70. $2,800. He's top 10 in both in the last 100 rounds too. Iron Game is top 5 in the last 100 rounds. And it looks like, he went through that little bit of a lull. He had the injury. It looks like he's back healthy. He looked fine last week. Every time I saw him, I didn't see him wincing. I didn't see any pain. So I do like Woodland. And then I do like Cameron Davis up top. Again, a guy who's just a baller. Another Aussie type narrative. A lot of Australians have played well here in the past. You saw Leishman last year. They're used to the Kikuyu type rough. They know how the ball goes out of it, and they're going to be hitting out of the rough a bunch. I mean, even the best out here, I think Morikawa hit the most fairways last year here, and it was like 68%. So you're going to have a lot of balls that are going to be out of the rough, and he's used to that. And when it comes to like just short-term stats, the guy's been a birdie machine. He's really been crushing par fives. You got to score well on the par fives here. So I like Cameron Davis just going down a little bit more. Taylor Gooch sort of sticks out to me a little bit. Again, that's mostly because, how well he has done throughout his career on par fives. Again, if you shoot four under on the par five under on the four par fives on the North course and the one drivable par four, I mean, odds are, unless you really suck it up on the South course, you're going to make the cut. And that's something that you're looking for at a $7,600 price. Just going down a little bit more. Who do you like here up top?
Speaking of a $7,600 price tag, what?
Yeah, Spieth. Well, we'll see. I mean, could this be his year that he comes back? I mean, there were rumors that he was working with Harmon, right? Isn't that what
Butch,
they said?
Yeah, and then Butch denied it.
But then Butch denied it. I really don't know what's going on with his game. I haven't seen him. I expect him to be minusculely owned even at $7,600. I don't think I'm going to bite, but at 5%, yeah, I could see people wanting to, but it's not going to be for me.
Yeah, I just thought, if a guy like Molinari can bounce back like he did last week, maybe Jordan Spieth can. A spot where you don't need to hit fairways sounds perfect for Jordan Spieth. Fast greens sounds good. He's made cuts here in the past. He's shown up even in tough fields and majors during his slump or whatever you want to call it, or his downswing. He's still shown up in these types of events. So it is interesting. I'm not sure how crazy I'll go. I'm with you on Cam Davis. I said earlier, I made up a rule. We got the Rick Gaiman rule with Lanto Griffin under 7,000. Anytime Cam Davis is under 8,000, I'm getting some shares, man. I don't care what the strength of field is. He's 3 for 3, made cuts here. Third last week, had a hot Sunday round all around. He outscores his finishing position so much. There's a lot of par fives here to do damage on. I don't really care. The only thing that worries me is there's another Cameron at the same price that you could say burned some people last week. He's the one where I'm saying it's an $8,900 price tag, now down to $7,900. Back to the well just on course fit. Solid result here last year. Burned plenty last week. Could definitely show up. We've seen it in the past. So I think I'll play a little bit of both of those guys and maybe even split them up. And then Woodland, you brought up, he's sort of the guy that I lean over Molinari. Just, I think that he fits the course better. And so that to me would be a guy that I would go to there for the upside. Kokrak, Gooch, two guys, maybe, Gooch 3 for 3 made cuts here, 21st last week, third here in 2019. That stands out to me. And then all the things you mentioned about him. So I don't hate that. And then I'll kick off the 7,500, this guy's jumping on the Ho train as well. Charles Ho, well, just barely missed the cut. But time to shine again, man. This is actually similar to a couple weeks ago, Kenny, where he finished 19th at the Sony with the Course History King. He's 13 for 13 here, as far as I can go back. Five of them are top 10s. So Charles Howell is jumping aboard the Ho train as well, and I'm adding him to the mix too.
All right, down below, I'll go with my final cash game cornerstone. It's going to be Russell Knox at 7,000. Taking a little bit of a risk here, but if I'm going all the way up to Rory, I got to have a low 7K guy on there. And the thing about Knox that has been impressing me, he went through that terrible little turn, in the middle of last year. But the big thing that I've noticed about him is his iron game has been extremely strong since the fall. He's gained more than 3 strokes with his irons in what I think 6 events since the fall started that have strokes gained stats. Gained 4.1 last week. Gained 6.1 strokes tee to green last week. He has 4 top 25, top 25s since the fall started. Now he has 4 missed cuts, so that's definitely going to be a risky factor. But overall, I mean, if you look over the years, I think he's made 4 of his last 5 cuts, a couple of top 25s, 3 straight in a row. I think it's worth a play in cash just to get that lower guy, and he's going to have upside. I mean, you see, he has a top 10 here. He has a 21st here. Those are going to work in cash for a guy that's 7K. So my four cash game cornerstones this week are going to be Rory at 11K, Wolf at 9.1, Woodland at 7.8, and Knox at 7 flat. That still leaves well over 15,000 to finish the rest of your lineup. So that's the way I'm going in cash this week. Other guys I like in this, I think I'll take a little flyer on EVR. Again, another guy really strong with his longer irons, really strong with his par fives. The only thing is the big numbers worry me about him. He can get a little bit wild off the tee. So it's a risky play, but if he can drive the ball correctly, I think he can make some noise, top 10. I think it's possible for EVR this week. I like Maverick McNealy. Played well last week. I'm just going a little bit on motivation. He's always all putter, but that's who he is. You know what I'm saying? That's how his game is. So, you know, his approach stats are never going to be top notch, but he's really, really strong on POA. So I'm going to go with him and see if that putter can't get hot, because he's definitely one of the top putters out there. And I'll probably go back to Seaweed Doug. Good showing last week, fifth, finished, I think, top 15, top 20 here a couple of years ago. You've seen glimpses of his game being strong, and I like how strong he is with his longer irons. Again, top 10 in 175 to 200, top 25 and 200 plus in his last 100 rounds on tour. Who do you like in the bottom range?
I'll go back to Homa. I think I talked about him a little bit earlier with the Finau stuff, but I watched a podcast, just that last week that he was on, the YNK podcast. It's called, pretty good. Check it out. Talks a lot about his mental game and things like that. It clearly didn't work out on Sunday for him either. He's in that same final group, and it didn't pan out, but still finished 21st. His last, event out before that, he was 12th, ninth here last year. I think he's got a great game. I like watching him. It's exciting to see him out there. So I think at 7,400, I'll go back to him. You mentioned EVR. I really like that. We sort of talked a little bit about him last week, but like him back in here. He's cheaper. It's a grinded out type major style event. That's sort of where we always see him go. He only made the cut last week and didn't do anything after that, but it was glimpses. And like I said, get a little bit more reps under the belt and be able to come out here and show up. So I don't mind that. Rory Sabatini has a decent course history here. Sneaky 12th place finish last week that really no one's talking about. And then I like your Knox call. But one guy that stood out to me, and our Listener League winner had him there, comedy mogul Johnny Huh, 8 out of 9 made cuts here, has been low-key on fire with the top 20 finishes that I mentioned, and his stats are all really good. 2 top 8s here in those 8 made cuts, and then 21st again last week doing his thing. So I think he's sort of an interesting GPP play down at the bottom of the 7K at 7K straight.
Yeah, I mean, I think he does make sense this week also. But let's move on to the
One more. What any Snedeker takes? Only because you're, from a cash perspective, you just think about, again, a guy that we talked about, all these dudes that came out and bounced back, and now he's a 2-time winner, course history crusher. But I bet you half the world doesn't even know he played the last 2 weeks because he's been so bad.
Yeah, he's just been horrible. I don't know if I could play him. I mean, I like course history and all, but, I mean, I favor Hoa. Current form more. Now, he is priced low enough where I take course history more into account, because a lot of these guys aren't going to have good form when they're 7K and below. But he's just been so bad. I might throw a flyer on him. We'll see. It just depends on who else I end up liking down here in this bottom range. I might throw some James Hahn out there instead. I like your John Huck call. So I don't know if I'm going to be able to.
Sneds is the POA killer too, though. So I wonder if getting back on POA could just make him feel better. I did see one quote where he literally threw Kevin Kisner under the bus and said, guys like Kisner can't even do nothing here because they get so frustrated with the POA that they just give up and then move on. And it gives him a chance to turn it on. And he's had a
Kisner said that. Yeah. Kisner has said that. So, I mean, I don't think he's really thrown him under the bus. I think he's just repeating what Kisner has said before in the past.
But I said, like, that's why he doesn't play his events. It makes sense. There's certain things you guys like to play on. Yeah, uh-huh. For sure.
All right, so let's move on to the 6K. Why don't you go ahead? Because I'm struggling down here, bro.
Oh, man, there's almost nobody here. And I realize this, a few weeks now.
I mean, there is. There's like 85 people down here. We got to pick some.
That's crazy. That's the problem.
It's definitely tough.
Here's the thing. Okay, so go away.
I'll go ahead and start because I'm going to go ahead back on Hoagie. I've been on the last 2 weeks and he's fucked me. So this is the third week where if I don't roster him, he's going to do well. I think he has pretty good history here, really good with his longer irons. So I'll play a little bit of Hoagie this week. Werenski, again, I'm going with form. Had a hell of a week last week, sort of faded on Sunday. But, I'll go with him to see how well he does, how he can garner that momentum and see how well he plays. Maybe a little bit of Scott Piercy at 6,700. Again, really good on longer par fours. Tee to green, he's top 25 in this field in the last 24 rounds. I mean, that's something when it comes down to it. I'll play a little bit of Bo Hogue. Again, a really good weekend last week. I think it was like 8 or 10 under. He shot on Saturday and Sunday at the Stadium Course. Christopher Ventura, another guy who does has a really good long iron game, and you're going to need that type of long iron success. He's been really good, top 10 in his last 24 rounds from 200 plus. So I'm going to go ahead and throw some of him out there. Will Gordon, who just, you know, again, this guy, he's been talked about, but he just hasn't really shown anything too much. But at 6,300 for a guy who's top six in both proximity from 175 to 200 and 200 plus in his last 24 rounds, I'm willing to take a small flyer on that. Aaron Baddeley, one of the best POA putters out there, again, down there below at 6,300. What about you?
Man, this the Ho narrative, I'm dragging it, but it might be true. You mentioned Bo Hogue. You mentioned Tom Hoagie. Like, these guys are all in the mix. And they actually have some history and have played well here. So, like, Hoagie's fifth and 12th in two of the last 3 years. So I don't hate that. You know, J.B. Holmes is another one. 16th, 4th, 6th, and 2nd in four of the last 5 years. Just dominated here. Haven't seen much of him lately, but that would make sense. And he can absolutely catch fire in these large field tournaments. So, man, this is a craziest narrative I think we've ever found, just stumbling upon as a joke, and it turns out to look like
I think we've talked about every single hoe out there.
Yeah, and it just came naturally. I was just saying that earlier. It was kind of funny on Hovland, and now it's panned out to be a thing. So that's it. I was going to say, you know, I'll go back to Streelman. I like him here on this setup better than like a 20 under, 25 under type event. So four of his last five made cuts last 5 years with a third place mixed in. Luke List played some really good golf last week, finished 21st, three straight made cuts here, 36th, 40th, and 12th. Stats all line up, can score for us on the par fives. My boy Notorious over at RG, you know, always plays Patrick Rogers anywhere he's not on Bermuda, and now he's even under under 7K. So ninth and fourth here in his last two made cuts here. So I do like a little Patrick Rogers. Another one I really like down here actually is, there's not many, that's what I said, out of the 85, there's a few, but Scott Stallings could be a pretty sneaky play since most normally don't reach down this low. He's made five of seven cuts here with a second, a win back in 2014, and his stats were absolutely dialed in last week with everything but the putter, and missed the cut on the exact number. So I'll go back to Scott Stallings. And then the other guy that he withdrew too recently, I can't remember when, but Johnny Vegas. I really haven't seen him for a minute, but his upside and just at this price, what he can do, 7 out of 10 made cuts here. Five of those are top 30s, one third place finish. I think he could score well enough and stay patient. So those are sort of the guys that stood out to me, Kenny, but this narrative, man, I'm going to see these hoe lineups everywhere this weekend, and hopefully they're at the top of the leaderboard.
I don't know. The hoe train is live right there. Shout out to the Godfather WWE. Yeah. One last guy I'll probably play is going to be Hank Lebioda. Good with par fives, good around the green, good from 175 to 200, only $6,200. I mean, that's enough for me to try and throw a flyer out there, because if I'm
Hank Lebby Ho, you can get him in there if you wanted to make it work.
If you wanted to, now we're stretching a little bit. There,
now we're stretching it. We're stretching a little bit.
But, you know, if I'm going to play Rory, if I'm going to play Rom, if I'm going to play X, I'm going to need some of these cheap ass guys down here below. So, Lebby Ho is another guy that I looked at as well. All right. So let's get to bets this week. Mr. Tambolin, who you got?
I got five guys here, man, and I'm debating a sixth, but I got Wolf and Brooks, both 33. I got Jay Day and Adam Scott, both 40. And then I got Woodland, 70, with the top five each way. And I'm like half debating just betting Spieth. He's 90-1 with the top five each way. So I'll probably bet that just because I don't really want, I don't know. I don't know what's better. He's not going to be owned though, probably. So I might just play him in DFS and get my exposure that way. So I only got those five in so far. I did not listen to Adon 7X and make sure, but that's fine. I have been doing okay. I'm going to stick with it here. And these are the five that I'm feeling going in. So what do you got?
All right, I listened to Adon 7X. I only have two bets right now. It's going to be Wolf at 32-1 and Woodland at 65-1. I think both those numbers are great. So I'm going to go ahead and go that. I will bet probably two more on Wednesday night. I'll put that in my article, and I'll probably bet two more live Thursday night and I'll put that on the Slack channel for the site that I work for. So that's probably the way I'm going to go about my betting card this week. I'll probably throw one top 20 before the event and probably look for a couple of more on Saturday evening. We'll see how these numbers go. All right. One and done. Who you got?
I was just going to say that the Saturday night thing, I was going to call that out too, but a lot of guys have won from like three back here. Sned's actually won from six and seven back. So there's definitely
some
chasing.
I don't know if I'm going to go winner. But top 20s is what I'm looking at on Saturdays, because I think you can get value at top 20s, you know, get plus 500, plus 600, which is a pretty large amount for a top 20 bet. You know, like I said, last week Bo Hogue was two strokes behind for top 20 going into Sunday, and he was plus 550. That's value right there. That's value. So I think that's what I'm going to look at when I go out and bet this weekend.
All right. Well, one and done. I've got a couple guys down right now that I'm looking at. Wolf and Day. That's pretty much what I'm considering right now. Wolf would just be part of that bet. It's almost like FOMO. I like some of the guys I can play around him better in DFS, especially if he gets to 20 plus ownership. We'll see how that shakes out as the week goes on. But considering those guys in the Day, like I said, just has a great track record here. And I don't really know when else I'm going to use him up or anything like that. Woodland, I guess, is an interesting one, just because he's, you know, showed a little something, as you said. Haven't, you know, where else am I saving him for? No clue. So might as well just burn him up. So I might do that too.
Yeah, I like the Woodland call. I'm actually in the top 100 in the Mayo Cup because I had Siwoo as my one and done last week. So that was like one good thing that happened last week.
How many events left? Like, so what, 40, like 40 or something?
Yeah. You know what? But I mean, I want to keep the key with that is staying up near the top. You know what I'm saying? So I'm going to, because it makes you motivated to make your picks actually every week, instead of, you know, I'm in like 2,785th place and I'll just forget to fucking make my pick, you know? So I'm thinking Romorori or Woodland. I have not decided. It's going to be one of those three, probably a big dog. So that's the way I'm going to go about it this week.
All right.
I think that's going to be it for this week. You can find me on Twitter at KendoVT. You can find my article on gupscorner.com. My course preview, stats, trends, stats to look for, all already out. Wednesday night, I'll have my new bets, my favorite DFS plays, some updates to the course. Of course, on the Slack channel, I'll be on there this week, putting in more bets and stuff like that. You might be able to find some on Twitter as well. So make sure to go check me out on gupscorner.com. Tambo.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at ToeTagAndTambo. Hit me up there if you guys have any questions. Then, of course, over at RotoGrinders, head on over to rotogrinders.com/dgen. Check it out. Get yourself some premium access. Got a couple different things going on. Monday review show of all the winning tournament lineups. Go through all of that. Tuesday is going to have the show with Notorious and STL Cards, breaking down the slate a little bit further, a little bit deeper. Have some ownership projections at that time. A little early look. Wednesday, I do my lineup HQ show, showing you how I'm using the optimizer, my exposures, anything I'm doing on the week with it, whether it's with course rotations, all of that stuff. You guys will want to check it out. And then just doing some other stuff, some sports card things, stuff like that. Check it out.
All right. So the field is strong. The course is long. Everyone needs to ride the whole train and let's win some motherfucking money. DGen Nation.